It's a Miracle. That's the title of our series, and we're going to look at another one today. We have been, while I ramble on here, you can be turning to Mark's Gospel and chapter 5. And as you look that up, I'll mention some of the miracles we've dealt with already. Turning water into wine, which is classed as the first miracle, so we began there. Healing of the nobleman's son, the centurion's servant. And Jesus, of course, didn't come into direct contact with these people, so that made them distinct. Then there were three people Jesus raised from the dead: Jairus' daughter, the widow of Nain's son, and Lazarus. He cast out demons at the Gentile region of Gadara, and he walked on water. He stilled the storm. He allowed Peter to walk in the water. Jesus fed 5,000 from a tiny lunch. And there were three catches of fish that were miraculous. One at the calling of the disciples, and one where a fish was caught with a coin in its mouth, and the other after the resurrection. Jesus healed a man who had been ill for 38 years at the pool of Bethesda. He performed three miracles, not only on the Sabbath, but in the synagogue. The man with an unclean spirit, the man with a withered hand, and the woman bent over for 18 years. He healed the man who was paralyzed and brought by his four friends. He healed a man who had been born blind. And last time we looked at the healing of the 10 lepers, concentrating on the one Samaritan leper who returned to give thanks. So if you're at Mark's Gospel, we're going to read of a miracle that is also recorded in Matthew 9 and Luke chapter 8. And from verse 21, we'll read of the woman who had the issue of blood. That's generally how she's referred to. So Mark 5 from verse 21. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. So the Lord's making a return visit, and he's coming back to the region of Capernaum. He arrives by boat, and he's greeted by a vast crowd of people. And just a wee quick reminder that Capernaum played host to so many of the wonderful things that Jesus did. That's where the healing of the centurion's servant took place, the healing of Peter's mother-in-law. Two blind men were healed there. A devil was cast out of a dumb man. And, of course, part of this story is that of the raising of Jairus's daughter, and then the woman with the issue of blood. So Capernaum was definitely a place that was blessed by God. So verse 22, Mark 5. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. So they really invaded his space. That's what that means. So from the moment the Lord disembarks from this vessel, he's really being pressed by the people. And not only just to get up to him, they're looking for healing. They're looking for something from him. And the first in line is Jairus. He's regarded here as a leader within the Jewish congregation, and that would have been an expression at the local synagogue, and he comes to Jesus on behalf of his young daughter. Now, we've dealt with that miracle before, so I'm not going to go over all that again, but there is one thing that I will mention from that story, and it connects the girl with the woman with the issue of blood, and it's the fact that both Luke and Mark tell us the girl was 12 years of age. And that's an interesting length of time. Because when we read on in Mark's Gospel, this is what we find, verse 25, Mark 5 and 25. And a certain woman which had an issue of blood, 12 years. And had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing better, but rather grew worse. She heard of Jesus. So as Jairus' daughter grew from a baby to a 12-year-old girl, this woman suffered. The exact same period of time. And because that's mentioned here, it makes me want to know more. I'm sure you're the same. Why is that there? Why are these two lengths of 12 years there? And the question maybe I would have in my mind is, was that wee girl born with a medical condition that had made her wee life miserable for the whole of the 12 years, finally wearing her down to the point of death? Or was she suddenly afflicted with some illness or other that unexpectedly cut her short life off? We just don't know. The synagogue ruler and his wife may have had 12 fun-filled years with their little girl while this older woman goes around exhausting every possible avenue of medical treatment, longing for relief from her distress. Isn't it an interesting thought? Just how different our journeys are. And today you could be here in the best of health. I can tell you, you wouldn't have to look far in the pews to find somebody who's not. And we can be at different places in the journey of life. But we're here today, in this moment, just as these two were there in that moment. And the same God who can give you grace for what you're going through is also the same God who can heal you. And maybe you're here and you haven't any distress last week, but it could be coming. We're all on a different journey, we're at different places, different stages. But we're here today in this moment, and the wonderful thing about this moment is God's here. And we have a God who's able, regardless of where you are on the journey of life. Back to verse 25, a certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years and had suffered many things of many physicians, had spent all that she had, and nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. She heard of Jesus. Here's a woman who has been reduced by this stage to poverty in an attempt to find a cure for her problem. What exactly was her problem? What kind of illness did she have? We really don't know for sure. But we do know that the main symptom was continual bleeding. We could say she had a chronic bleeding disorder. Now that would have been very upsetting for the woman. Been very difficult to manage. And may well have been accompanied by pain. But that's not where her trouble stopped. Because in Jewish biblical law, there were certain bodily discharges that placed a person into the category of unclean. Leprosy, as we looked at last week, was certainly one of those. And bleeding in woman was another. And it made her ritually unclean. Whether it was bleeding for short duration, there were rules about that. But in the case of this woman, she has been living with a chronic version of this for 12 long years of her life. So what did it mean for her to be ritually unclean? Leviticus 15 and 19 reads like this: "And if a woman have an issue, and if her issue in her flesh be blood, she shall be put apart 7 days, and whosoever toucheth her shall be unclean until the evening. And everything that she lieth upon in her separation shall be unclean. Everything that she sitteth upon shall be unclean. Whosoever toucheth her bed shall wash his clothes, bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the evening. And whosoever toucheth anything that she sat upon shall wash his clothes, bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the evening." She was literally untouchable. And yet to look at her, you wouldn't have known. Isn't that so true of many of us and what we go through in life? Quite often, to look at us, you'd never know what we're going through, what's going on in our lives, what has been thrown at us in the last week. Her problem was a hidden problem, but it brought about this sense of uncleanness and this sense of separation. You see, she could have concealed her problem from the eyes of people outside of her household, but certainly not within her household. But even though that was the case, and even though it was an unseen problem, it would have been a very dangerous thing for her to just decide, well, I'm going to the temple. They'll never know. See, the whole point of these strict and seemingly severe laws and rules, they're there to make a serious point. It's the same as when we went through our series on the tabernacle and the blood, the death. But it was making a very, very, very serious point that without shedding of blood, there's no remission. That sin is serious. And this is also designed to be something within the lives of ordinary people in the community of Israel to make them know and remember and keep before their eyes God's greater teaching on his perfect, spotless holiness and our sinfulness. And so to stress these points, a list of scenarios was compiled by God that would prohibit a Jew from full communion until the uncleanness was dealt with. And that being so, a correct way of access was prescribed in the Word of God. So, whenever we think about what we've just read in Leviticus 15, that's what's behind it. So this dear lady would have felt miserable enough in and of herself because of the illness. Because of the illness, she would never really have felt physically clean. But on top of that, she would have felt religiously unclean. Can you imagine having that sense of constantly being unfit for the house of God? Think of the difficulties of this dear woman if she were a married woman. Think of all that she would be missing out on over these 12 years. Not being able to go to the synagogue, the temple. She couldn't go round to your house and sit in your chair because she knows what that would have meant then for you. The safest thing for her to do was just to separate herself and try her best to find a cure. And it's with that in mind, and that sense of desperation, that when we read of her spending all that she had, we can understand it, can't we? She wanted so desperately to be part of community life again, and not to be in this ongoing state of ritual uncleanness. So is it any wonder that she thought nothing of spending her last denarii looking for relief? I imagine her hearing of the latest physician on the scene, the latest go-to person. Have you heard about so-and-so? And all these quacks would come on the scene with their cure-all potions. Now, we're talking here a couple of thousand years ago, but up until fairly recently, this was all a lot of people had, even a century ago, was the brown bottle man. And people would have done anything, taken anything. In fact, the suggestion in the reading is there that some of the things she tried actually made her worse. So it probably didn't do anything about what she was suffering from, but has maybe left her with other symptoms and done something even more deadly to her than if she hadn't had any medical intervention at all. Maybe she was told about the latest place to go, some sulphurous spring, some holy well or other. Some new idea. And as she heard about all of these things, there would be, for a moment, hope rekindled. I'm going to try this. It's worth a try. Don't care what it costs. I'm going to have a go. But time and time and time again, it resulted in disappointment and further misery. You know what disappointment feels like, don't you? And you know what disappointment feels like when you've invested in something. And you know what disappointment feels like when you've got your hopes up. And you know what disappointment feels like when you've spent your last penny. She got worse and the money was gone. Now, things were very different, of course, in her day compared with now. Because if you and I were out of pocket and unable to survive by our own means, well, at least there are some benefits that we might be able to avail of. But here we find a woman without that crutch. And her story is a testimony to her determination, because you would have thought by now she would have given up, because she hears of Jesus. Now, slightly different this time, because she has no money now to come to Jesus with. She's coming to Jesus at the end of herself. That's a good way to come to Jesus, isn't it? Because what keeps so many folk away from the Lord, if I were using this story to preach the gospel, is this sense that I don't need anything. Do I need salvation? And we have so much today that so many people really don't feel their need. But it's a different story whenever you realize your need, when God has, through his working, brought you to the end of yourself. And for some of us that was the case. And oh, we were just reaching out, weren't we? And all we needed was Jesus. Just when she needs this most, she has no money to pay, she hears about a man who heals, and he has no charge. What a wonderful Saviour we have. That's what annoys me so much about these people who go around supposedly healing and being the channels of healing, and it's all about this. I don't see that in Jesus, do you? It's not there. Jesus, there's no charge. Verse 27. And when she heard of Jesus, she came in the press behind and touched his garment. And this is her reasoning. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And as we've already stated, the eager crowd were making it very difficult for Jesus even to get from the shore to the house of Jairus. And it would have been just as difficult for this woman to get near Jesus. We know what she was thinking. It's expressed in the gospel records. And it would seem that it was never her intention to call out to Jesus, as many other people who were healed did, or to even ask him up close. Her plan from the off was quite simple. If I could just touch his clothes. If I could just touch his clothes. That was it. It was plain. But it's also strange whenever we think of all that I just said regarding those who would come in contact with her. Regarding with those who would have to wash their clothes and be unclean for the rest of that day if they even sat on the chair that she had sat on. She wants to get near enough to touch him. Perhaps she was like many others who were present, not only on this occasion where we read of a vast crowd, but we've read of many others where there were similarly huge crowds following the Lord. And like them, she was maybe from out of town. So nobody knew her. But there's a problem in that, because although she's out of town and the people around mightn't have known that they shouldn't be anywhere near her, or she shouldn't be anywhere near them, if she's genuinely looking for healing from God, God knows. God knows. And she would have been aware that God would be displeased with her. So to get our mind around that and what she was actually doing and why was she doing what she was doing, was she wrong to do what she did? We need to jump over a wee bit to verse 34 because although we haven't read it, we will read it, but I want to bring this in at this point because it's important. Because it's Jesus' analysis of what she did. He says, "Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole." He does not condemn her. He believes what she did was right. And we'll hopefully maybe untangle that a wee bit as we go on. In Jesus' eyes, what this woman did was an act of faith. And this is what she said, "If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole." This was a woman who knew exactly what the law said about people touching her or touching anything she had touched. She knew. And yet she arrived at this position, and Jesus describes it as an act of faith. We read in verse 27 that she heard about Jesus, but we don't know exactly what she heard. But what she heard increased her faith. We know that much. And she was so full of faith that she was determined to touch his clothes. Maybe she had heard about a leper who had been touched by Jesus. Now, he was ritually unclean. We read that story in Matthew 8, Mark 1 and Luke 5. He's the leper who said, "If thou wilt, thou canst make me clean." And Jesus said, "I will, be thou clean," and touched him. It's just possible that this dear woman grasped something that changes how we look at this. That she grasped something about the flow of healing from Jesus. You see, it was never going to be the case that the uncleanness would flow from the woman to him, and the same with the lepers. It was always going to be the case that the healing power would flow from Jesus to her. She hears about him. She goes in search of him. She's reasoning this in her mind. And all of that is good except for this. Immediately, there's a setback. There's a big crowd. And she has to try her best to get near Jesus. But when we looked at the paralyzed man carried by the four friends, they hit a barrier to encounter as well. And they got over it. Again, their faith. So here's a crowd. They're pressing, they're thronging Jesus. But this desperate woman is determined to push her way through. She's not going to miss her opportunity. And she comes from behind. She still has her plan in mind, that simple one, just a touch. Maybe she came from behind because it's all she could do, it's the way that she was being jostled. Or perhaps she came from behind because to come from the front and to face Jesus might have been seen as inappropriate. She comes in accordance with her plan, hoping to simply touch Jesus. But then she may have been thinking this, because if the law placed such importance on not only the person with the uncleanness, but the clothes they wore and the clothes of the people they came in touch, into contact with, if the law placed importance on that, could it be that if you turn that completely around, and instead of thinking of uncleanness, you think about the purity and power of Jesus, is it possible that she thought that the very power would be in his clothes as well? and she set her heart upon touching his clothes. Here's what Luke writes in Luke 8 and verse 43. And a woman having an issue of blood 12 years, which had spent all her living upon physicians, neither could be healed of any, came behind him and touched the border of his garment. Now that reminds me of a different occasion. And Matthew records this in Matthew 14 and 34. And when they had gone over, they came into the land of Gennesaret. And when the men of that place had knowledge of him, they sent out into all the country round about and brought unto him all that were diseased, and besought him that they might only touch the hem of his garment. And as many as touched were made perfectly whole. And then in Mark 6 and 56 we read a very general statement. And whithersoever Jesus entered into villages or cities or country, they laid the sick in the streets and besought him that they might touch, if it were, but the border of his garment. And as many as touched him were made whole. Isn't that an amazing thought? Now, if all these records tell us something, they suggest this woman wasn't alone in her reasoning. So there's a uniformity in this thinking. There must be some significance in touching the border or the hem of the garment. Now, when Bible writers speak of that part of clothing, whether it's a hem or a border that's mentioned, or even a fringe at times, they're referring to what was the last step in the production of that garment. In some garments, it was indeed the creation of a fringe. And when we think about the function of that, according to Numbers chapter 15, that could have been used as well in the way it was constructed and the way the cords and the fringe were woven together. That was a way that God could actually use as a memory aid. That in the corners and the fringes and the borders of garments, the last thing that was done would be there to remind the wearer of the commandments of God. And that's another subject that we just wouldn't have time to go into at the minute. She came behind him and touched the border or hem of his garment. Why would that be important? Well, there's a prophecy in Malachi chapter 4 and verse 2. And it says this, "But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings." And the Hebrew word wing there, kanaf, is also the word for the corners of the garment. The hems, the fringes, the tassels, all of that. The Son of Righteousness with healing. It was also the finished part. And of course we think of our God with a finished work. And yes, if it spoke of the commandments, if it spoke of the law, if it was a reminder of that, well, God in Jesus finished all of that, fulfilled it all, and provided a way whereby we could be healed from every disease. She touched. And verse 29 says, "Straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague." She knew. She felt. Something had happened. She was different. Her illness was gone. But that's not all. Verse 30. "And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue or power had gone out of him," there's the flow, left him, went to her, "turned about him in the press and said, 'Who touched my clothes?'" And the disciples, you can understand totally why they were amazed at this. The disciples said unto him, verse 31, "Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest, 'Who touched me. They would have been thinking he's crazy. The whole distance from the shore that he's been making his way towards the home of Jairus, he's been interrupted by what this woman has done. He's been jostled and cajoled and touched over and over and over and over again with barely room to breathe. And he says, "Who touched me?" Well, you see, we could all make a dash for that door and we would all be stuck and there'd probably be a bottleneck and all the rest of it. We might eventually get out the door and everybody would be touching everybody. And if I said, "Who touched me?" you'd think he's crazy. But somebody's touch was different that day. You see, we can come to the house of God, we can sit in the presence of God, and we can blame everything. "This is not a great meeting today. I got nothing out of that today." But there'll be somebody maybe who came in the exact same meeting, and they'll go away different. Why? Because their touch was different. Their reaching out was different. They came with faith. And they didn't leave disappointed. "Who touched me?" Wonder, is the Lord saying that this morning? Is there somebody here and you're reaching out? What a difference faith makes. There's an old chorus, "Reach out and touch the Lord as he goes by." Do you remember that? You'll find he's not too busy to hear your heart's cry. He's passing by this moment, your need to supply. "Reach out and touch the Lord as he goes by." And she's healed. It's a miracle. She'll never be the same again. Well, before she has time to scurry away and maybe gather together the few things that she would need to go to the temple and make the sacrifices that were required so that she could be pronounced clean again and be able to rejoin life, before she has any time to do that, verse 32 says, "Jesus looked around to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth." Can you imagine being her and hearing Jesus say, "Who touched me?" And she's behind him. You wouldn't know maybe what to make of this. Suddenly, you know, you came in faith. You did what you planned to do. You received the healing. You know you're healed. But this is now another dimension. He's saying, "Who touched me?" And she did the right thing. She came and told him all the truth. And he said to her, verse 34, "Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace. Be whole of thy plague." Initially she came from behind. But suddenly she's in front of him. Suddenly it's face to face. You know, for anybody unsaved here today, we can hide away from God. We can avoid him. Or we can try to get from him all that we can by saying, you know, "Lord, if you do this for me, I'll..." You know the way many people do. And, "Oh, I will get right with you, God, if you just sort this out." But one day you'll have to be face to face with God. Do you see all the people in this world who cause so much grief today to us as Christians by the way they legislate wrong as right and right as wrong? Just always remember, one day they'll have to face God. But I like this. Jesus says, "Daughter." He could have said, "Woman." There many a time he said to his own mother, "Woman." But he says here, "Daughter." And here's a woman who needed to hear that. Because for 12 years, it's all been about separation. It's all been about staying away. It's all been about all her relationships being put on hold. And the word daughter speaks of relationship. Doesn't it? Daughter. She now knows that all's well with her father. She now knows that she can have daughterly access to God. And he says, go in peace. Here's what Paul writes in Colossians 1. Speaking of Jesus, having made peace through the blood of his cross, you who were enemies, now hath he reconciled to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable in his sight. You know, we are unclean too. In our sin. And he has made peace through the blood of his cross for you and me. The woman was far away with regard to the separation her uncleanness caused. She had 12 years of anguish, 12 years of misery, 12 years of banishment, 12 years of dashed hopes, 12 years of broken dreams. And in an instant she's healed and she has the peace of God. She's peace with God. She has a life. Maybe you think you have a life today, but it doesn't include Jesus. That's fine for whatever span you get. But there's many of us in this room this morning, and we mightn't think we've much of a life because of things that we've to endure, but we have a life ahead of us. And we'll never know a minute's sickness in glory. And it's a miracle. May the Lord bless these thoughts to all of our hearts for his name's sake.